Hello, this is Rob Pearman. In our series of Talking Bookshelf, I'm delighted to welcome to the studio today Val Page. Val is a well-known reader on our programs, but she's also an avid reader of books. And this is one of the books, Val, that you're going to talk about that was in your reading group.
Circle, yes.
Tell me what the book is.
It's An Officer and a Spy by Robert Harris. And it's about the Dreyfus Affair. And I was particularly interested in reading this because, like most people, well, very many people, I vaguely knew about the Dreyfus Affair. I vaguely knew there was a scandal about an officer in the French army, but I didn't really know the details of it. And by the time I'd finished reading this book, I felt I knew all the details. But not only that, it was a novel. It was written in novel form. Even though all the people in it are real and all the things that happened in it really happened, he wrote it as a novel, and it's what I call a page-turner.
Yeah, I agree with you, absolutely. And listening to it, it's just as compulsive because you have to stay with it because the audiobook it sort of carries you through in the same way that the book does. Mm. I mean, I was mixing reading it and listening to the audiobook, and I was reading it till 2:30 in the morning one day, I realised, because I couldn't put it down. Mm. Robert Harris is very good at this. He does an enormous amount of research.
Yes, that came over.
Mm-hmm. He was a journalist. Mm-hmm. That's where he started. He was a political journalist. He worked with people like Jeremy Paxman, he wrote for the newspapers, he was on Newsnight and so on. After he wrote his first book, he made enough money to stop being anything other than a writer, and he's been able to write just his books since. The Dreyfus Affair, of course, taking place in late 19th century France.
Yes.
They're still suffering after the the defeat in the Franco-Prussian War.
Yes.
So there's a very great sense you get through about the army. The mood in the army is one of sort of never again, we're not going to be defeated by anybody.
Yes. And when you hear about their secret service, it seems so amateurish compared with the secret service we have now. And of course, they haven't got all the machinery that we've got. And one of the things, the main thing, in fact, that the whole prosecution rested on was they had a cleaner in the German embassy who would collect all the rubbish from the papers, and then somebody in the Secret Service would painstakingly stick them all together to see if there was anything that might compromise them. And they found a letter and stuck it together and decided that it had been leaking information to the Germans about the movement of the troops. And they decided, on very little grounds, that it was Dreyfus. Now, Dreyfus was a Jew, and he was a rich Jew. And so, partly because he was a Jew, partly because he was rich, there was envy there, and there was anti-Semitism, that they decided it was him. And a lot of evidence was then manufactured by the people in he was Major Picard then, in his office. And he, too, believed at that time that Dreyfus was a traitor and had been selling secrets. And he decided, after a long time, that when they had the trial and they gave him the public humiliation, it was a secret trial at which there was only one piece of evidence, which was this letter. And Major Picard, as he was then, he managed to prove that it had been manufactured, that it was not Dreyfus who wrote it. But all the same, Dreyfus had a public humiliation. He was sent to Devil's Island and taken away from his wife and his small children. And I think Robert Harris manages to get over how dreadful it was, not only to be in such a terrible place in Devil's Island, to be guarded the whole time, to be not allowed out, and living in those dreadful conditions, but also thinking that his wife and his two children were suffering in his absence.
The story is taken very much from the viewpoint of this other senior officer, Picard,
Major Picard, who
starts off believing, as everybody in the army did, this man Dreyfus is guilty because there's this evidence has been found and it's all believed. He questions that. Let's hear the moment at which he sees Dreyfus suffering the public humiliation, which is a core to the beginning of the story.
In the name of the people of France, he intoned, the first permanent court-martial of the military government of Paris, having met in camera, delivered its verdict in public session as follows. The following single question was put to the members of the court. Is Alfred Dreyfus, captain of the 14th Artillery Regiment, a certified general staff officer and probationer of the Army's general staff, guilty of delivering to a foreign power or to its agents in Paris in 1894 a certain number of secret or confidential documents concerning national defence? The court declared unanimously, yes, the accused is guilty. The court unanimously sentences Alfred Dreyfus to the penalty of deportation to a fortified enclosure for life.
The problem of a whistleblower is that when you blow the whistle and everybody in the institution is determined that it shall not be let out, we sense that it's quite contemporary, isn't it? They close ranks very quickly, don't they?
They did. And from the people who worked for Major Picard and the people above him, they all closed ranks. They couldn't admit to the fact that they had made a mistake. And so the mistake festered and went on, getting bigger and bigger. And that was the scandal. Not that, as I imagined before I read the book, that a French officer had betrayed his country. The scandal was that everybody above him covered up and actually manufactured other documents. And I think what's so very good about Major Picard is he didn't particularly like Dreyfus, but he wanted justice. He realised as time went on that there had been a cover-up, and he worked so hard to try and make people understand that there had been a miscarriage of justice that he put his own career at stake, even to the point where they put him in prison. Not in Devil's Island, but it was a very bad prison, and he went through it and gradually managed to prove and get a swell of opinion and public opinion behind him, partly by going to the press, that this Dreyfus was not in fact the man who had been so bad, that in fact it was another office called Esterhazy.
Now, we've got to be careful not to give away too much.
Oh, we won't give it away.
The trouble is, if anybody knows anything about Dreyfus, they know the whole story already.
Yes.
If they don't know anything about Dreyfus, it may sound quite complicated, but in fact, it's so well written that it really carries you along. And even if you don't know a great deal about history, you don't care about a great deal about the 19th century, it's just so compulsive.
That it is. It's a page-turner. What put me off the book right from the start was, first of all, it's written in the first person, and I don't like books that are written in the first person. And secondly, it was written in the present tense, and I don't like books that are written in the present tense. But he's such a good storyteller that very shortly you forget all about this and you just get immersed in what is happening and the way he's managing things.
He's written a number of books. I mean, talking about Robert Harris, I was looking him up, and, you know, he quotes, he spent his childhood in a small rented house on a Nottingham council estate.
Really?
But through his own intelligence and ambition, he got to a local school, and then he got to another local school, and then he got to Cambridge, where he was a student, where he studied and became a journalist there, as it were, and then went into the BBC, Panorama, Newsnight, all that, and writing for other newspapers as well. And his first book published, the one that made him enough money, as he said, to buy his house in the country, which is where he still lives, was called Fatherland, which is, I know you said you didn't particularly like it.
No, it didn't grab me.
No,
like
I think it presupposes, it says, what if Hitler had won? And it takes place in Berlin in the 1960s, where Hitler is still alive and the Nazis are still in charge, but there's all the inevitable corruption of a system that's going wrong. But
and again, a lot of the characters are real.
Yes.
And people that we've heard about in the war, including Hitler, of course.
That's right. And that's what Harris does. I mean, one of his most infamous recent books is supposedly, and I will have to say this, allegedly based upon the life and times of Tony Blair, as it were. He was a very strong supporter of Tony Blair, and he got very upset about the Iraq War. So he wrote this book, which became a film. And again, it's called The Ghost. And that it's again, very much a typical Harris write a story. And there are so many others. He's written Pompeii, which is about the... Again, he takes a historical situation where there are characters that are real, and he develops them within that context. And that's what makes him so exciting to you as a writer.
And it isn't just dull historical facts. It lives. It makes you. It gives you an empathy with this poor chap. despite the fact he's not really a particularly likeable character. That's what's so clever about it, I think.
We listened to an extract earlier, and we could have found many extracts because it's so compulsive to play. One of the ones that you suggested we might play was where the letters from Dreyfus back home to his wife, in most cases, are being intercepted and read. And so Picard, the hero, as it were, of our tale, sees these letters, and he's already in deep doubt about the injustice that's going on here. And on the back of one of the letters, written out several times by Dreyfus, and the author says, as if he's trying to commit it to memory, is a quotation from Shakespeare's Othello. And if I can bore you by reading this, "Who steals my purse steals trash, 'tis something, nothing. 'Twas mine, 'tis his, and has been slave to thousands. But he that filches from me my good name robs me of that which not enriches him and makes me poor indeed." And that really strikes Picard, doesn't it?
It does, that he is fighting for this man's good name. And I think he's a real hero because he even allows his own good name to be besmirched and himself to be put into prison. And I think that's real heroism, that you do this for a man you don't particularly like, but in the name of justice, knowing what he's going through and feeling for his family and feeling for this chap's good name, poor old Dreyfus, he puts himself, Major Picard puts himself in that situation where his own good name is besmirched and people call him traitor and they shout at him in the street. And he does that for the sake of justice. That's real heroism, I think.
You mentioned again, we're trying not to give too much away, and yet you know that a lot of people know it. So if a whistleblower, as it were, is raising an issue which says that this man is not guilty, somebody else must be, there is another person who's identified by name, and you call him by his name Esterhazy, which is true. And there's some interesting feature about Esterhazy, I believe.
Yes, that he finally went to, wait for it, Harpenden. Now, he was a very bad man. He was a gambler, he was dissolute, he was a womaniser, and he was a traitor. And he ended up in Harpenden.
Thank you, Phil, very much. We've been talking about Robert Harris's book, An Officer and a Spy, which is all about the Dreyfus affair. The music accompanying this edition of the Talking Bookshelf is called Good Times. It was composed and recorded by Goffby of Kenilworth, who's very generously given us permission to use his music. The title that Val Page has been discussing is An Officer and a Spy, written by Robert Harris, narrated by David Rentoul. The extract used in this discussion was provided by Caliber Audiobooks. Caliber is a registered charity providing audiobooks to those who are unable to read printed books, whether for reasons of visual or other impairment. Caliber has over 8,000 titles in its catalogue. All of them can be requested as an MP3 memory stick, which plays back on a boombox, or as a single MP3 CD. There's a one-off joining fee of £35, but thereafter there are no further costs. Titles are sent out free of charge and with no fee. Caliber is spelt Calibre. The telephone number for more information is 01296 432 339. I'll repeat that. 01296 432 339. The website is www.calibre.org.uk. www.calibre.org.uk.